In the year 1600, for example, the Dutch landed fully 10,000 men on the coast of Flanders in an effort to capture the port of Nieuport. Nevertheless, despite this impressive amphibious effort, the Dutch were driven off by Spanish troops with very heavy losses, and it became clear to them that they could no more reconquer the southern Netherlands than Spain could reconquer the northern Netherlands. In the very long run, the Dutch became as weary of the war as the Spanish did. After all, it cost Spain an awful lot of money to fight the war. It cost the Dutch an awful lot as well. The degree to which the Dutch population was taxed during the war was legendary. And therefore, in March of 1607, both sides were able to sign a ceasefire. Unfortunately, however, it was not possible for them to reach some kind of permanent peace settlement, because, again, the main stumbling block was religion. And here again, we come back to a point which I mentioned earlier and which underscores the, when all qualifications have been made, the truly religious nature of the revolt of the Netherlands. Spain could not bring itself to allow the Dutch rebels to exercise their Protestant religion. It insisted on only having Catholics in its realms, and the Dutch were certainly unwilling to do this and were not in a position to be forced to give up their position. But something had to be done, and accordingly, since a permanent peace settlement couldn't be reached, they decided to sign a truce. In the year 1609, a 12-year truce arrangement was signed between the Dutch Republic and the Spanish Crown. What is interesting is that other European powers could see that this was a kind of fig leaf to cover an embarrassing situation. They promptly recognized the Dutch Republic as independent. Now, as we shall see, the war would resume in 1621, but by that point, the resumption of the war in 1621, it was obvious that Spain was fighting a sovereign nation and not merely a collection of rebel provinces. The Spanish crown itself actually never expected after 1609 to reconquer the northern rebel provinces. The main concern that Spain had was to protect its own colonial possessions against piracy and raiding by Dutch forces. And to some extent, and this may seem, again, an odd thing to the modern mind, Spain was always concerned about its reputation. And indeed, the Spanish word, reputación, often shows up again and again in the bureaucratic memos of the Spanish crown. They were aware of the fact that it was embarrassing, it was humiliating for a collection of watery provinces to have fought the King of Spain to a standstill. And therefore, to some extent, when the war resumed in 1621, Spain had hoped to make itself look a little bit less foolish than it felt in 1609. Nevertheless, and as we shall see in subsequent lectures, this effort was no more successful than the efforts of the 16th century had been. And in the year 1648, Spain would finally be forced to acknowledge Dutch independence. But the basic issue, it's fairly clear, had been settled by 1609. The final stage of the conflict between Spain and the Netherlands, that is to say the war that opened in 1621 and continued intermittently until 1648, will again command our attention in subsequent lectures, although the context will be different. When we discuss the Thirty Years' War in Germany, a conflict which raged between 1618 and 1648, we're going to see that Spanish commitments in the Netherlands had repercussions not just for Spain and not just for the Netherlands, but also for almost all of Central Europe, including Germany, France, and Northern Italy. But before proceeding to that conflict, before proceeding to our discussion of the Thirty Years' War, I would like in the next lecture to offer some reflections on warfare itself. I spend an awful lot of time in these discussions of the Dutch Revolt talking about the problems of warfare that Spain experienced, the problems of geography favoring the defense over the offense, the problems of moving armies around Europe over such long distances, the problem of projecting force, if you want to think of it in contemporary parlance, and indeed the problems of simply paying for warfare in early modern Europe. Because I think it has to be stressed that it always takes two sides to fight a war. And although it's interesting to note that Philip II lost the war by going bankrupt, I think what's kind of interesting is to ask the question of, well, why didn't the Dutch go bankrupt first? And indeed, they did have fiscal problems. And then the question of why they were able to last fiscally longer than Philip is something I think we need to discuss. Interestingly enough, what we're going to see is that both the technical and the fiscal side of war were intimately linked with each other. A series of technical changes in the way that warfare was actually waged in Europe in the early 16th century would make armies larger and therefore make armies much more expensive, and thereby put enormous pressure on the structure of the state itself.